From TMP to TTNG, for sure the cure and those tired meme jeans, Hella Kinsella and the promise ring, sunny day real estate and rights this spring, Prince Twinkle Daddy's help keep the dream alive. I constantly thank God for Algernon and Remo Christie Front Drive, Mineral Snowing High Tide Hotelier and more, Rio Limo only consists of the DC Emotive Hardcore.
What's up? This is episode 28 of the E-Word. This is our A Decade Under the Influence episode for 2011. This is Kyle, and over there is Ellie. Ellie, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm pretty stoked right now.
Because our 2011 winner of A Decade Under the Influence is Algernon Cadwalder and their album Parrot Flies, and we have Tank, drummer of Algernon Cadwalder, on the podcast. Tank, what's
you
up?
You fucking know it. How are you?
You smoked him.
How's it going?
You smoked him.
I'm ready. I'm always ready.
He had to do it to him.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Cool. Listen, I'm here. I'm here to talk. I'm ready to chat. Give me your best.
We are so stoked for this because I think we've said it on the podcast tons of times that we are a pro Parrot Flies podcast in the fake competition where people pin some kind of Cadwalder up against Parrot Flies.
It's very rare.
Is it really
to find that?
I mean, like,
no, I'm
like,
just, I have no idea.
Or,
I really,
okay.
I honestly have no idea. But that's cool, and I'm pro Parrot Flies too.
Are you?
Yeah, I gotta be. I'd love to answer any questions you guys have. This is going to be all about Parrot Flies? Is that what the questions are going to? Okay.
So
we have some questions about like the context around the record. So we're going to be talking about pre-Parrot Fly stuff as well. But are going to do Parrot Flies like track by track and
awesome.
Like examine the impact of the album and whatnot.
Yeah,
that should be fun. Cool.
I guess. But before we get into this, Ellie, do you have any quick personal thoughts about Parrot Flies?
In my opinion, and this is the opinion of someone with an emo podcast that has just under 1,000 followers on Twitter, so you know it means something. Parrot Flies is the best album of that OG emo revival. Like, it's just like unstoppable. And I'm really excited to get to If It Kills Me because that's probably in my top 5 songs of all time.
Wow,
I think
that's
this,
awesome.
I think this album is just like a massive fucking achievement, and everyone involved in it should be very proud.
Thanks so much. That's super kind of you. Yeah, it was really fun and stressful to make, but it was a blast making music with my best friends, who I've known since, you know, I've known Joe and Peter since I was 15, 16, seeing their bands play, and all their bands, like literally every band they were in when we were kids were incredible. Like, every band. So I knew...
I really want to talk about this because I want to talk about Halfway to Holland in a little bit too.
Yeah. This is
incredible.
Also my favorite Algernon record. It's probably like a top 5, probably top 3 of the decade for me. I have 5 copies of it on vinyl.
Oh my god! Thank you so much.
I have
that's
it,
incredible.
I have an OG Parrot Flies T-shirt. I'm obsessed with this record, and this is going to be wild to talk about. Want to do this at the top of the episode. Tank, you're in a new band that's playing shows.
Yes, I am, which is unbelievable. So after Algernon ended, you know, I kind of didn't play music for a while, probably 7 years. I focused on having kids and starting a family and running a business and doing all the things you need to do in order to make that successful, which I feel like at this point I'm pretty good. And it took me about 7 years to kind of realize, okay, I think I'm ready to do something musical again. So I started this band called Magic Growing with my friend Luke and Guy and Justin, and it's been super fun. We played our first show actually inside this storage space that I'm in now, on the Jersey Shore, you know, like a couple weeks ago, and it was so fun.
That's punk as fuck.
Yeah, it was so much fun. It's like 5 minutes from my house. It was cool. I wanted my kids to come, but it was like we didn't play till 9:30, and they need to sleep. But the next show, hopefully, I can get my kids to come. But yeah, it was so cool. I'm happy playing music. I recently lost like 120 pounds. So
hell yeah,
drums. Yeah, I am doing. I'm on a health kick, and I feel like I can play drums better than I've ever played in my life. So it's been a very inspiring time the past 6 months playing drums again and writing music. So yeah, I'm so stoked on it.
Is there like a page for people to like find out about the band? You have like Facebook or anything up?
I think Luke did make a Facebook, but we recorded a demo and we're just waiting till it's you know, finished. It just needs to get mixed a little bit more, and then we'll put it out for everyone to listen to.
Sick.
Yeah.
That's super exciting. So this is straight up the first band that you've been in since Algernon?
I messed around with like some projects with some friends, but nothing that, you know, we were ever ready to play shows. It was more just recording. Like I sent some drum tracks to my friend Daniel in Teenage Cool Kids.
Sweet.
And we did some stuff together. And then I sang and played drums in a band called Spa Day. Which is with my friend Biff and Mason, and that was really cool. I just never really had the time to actually, you know, be in a band that practices, you know, a couple times a week. Mm-hmm. And now I can do that, and you know, I got the itch to play again, which is really, you know, awesome. Stoked that I'm so you know, eager to get behind the drums. It's a good feeling.
Well, Ellie, are you ready to go back to 2011 with us?
I am. So I actually want to start off just like, you know, like we said, like contextualizing the record a little bit and Algernon as a whole. So Tank, to your knowledge, is Halfway to Holland like the earliest point in the Algernon family tree? Is that like as far back as it goes?
Yeah. I would say that's a good starting point.
And that band was definitely like, there was like some screamo influences at times and some like hardcore influences, and it sounded like pop punk a lot of the time. And
yeah.
Then Algernon came along and it seemed like there was kind of like this shift in what was happening. It got a little bit mathier. Kyle has this in the notes that a lot of writing makes the instant comparison to Captain Jazz. So
sure.
What influenced that kind of like decision to break where Halfway to Holland was coming from and kind of start driving this at the time a sound that not a lot of people were doing?
I think it just came natural. We were all fans of Cap'n Jazz and everything that can, you know, the Kinsells do. Literally we're all own a lot of the stuff that they've put out and, you know, have been fans of theirs for a very long time. Halfway to Holland, I remember, you know, because I'm a little bit younger than Joe and Peter, and I remember going and seeing them. It was just, you know, pop punk. Drummer was incredible. This dude TJ played drums so good. Pop punk with Peter's vocals that, you know, has that kind of Cap'n Jazz feel. And then, you know, maybe a few years later, that's when Algernon, you know, started with the original drummer, who was Nick, who is on the first album, Some Kind of Catwalader. And then, you know, then I joined maybe two and a half years later, right before the Some Kind of Catwalader came out. So my first show was the record release show for Some Kind of Catwalader, which I did not play on. That was my first show. Yeah.
That's sick.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really fun. And at the time, I didn't have a place to play drums, so I was doing construction work, so I would listen on the way to work and play the drums, you know, to Nick's, you know, I played Nick's parts while I was driving or whatever on the construction site. And then I went and jammed with them in West Philly. They asked me to jam, and I was already a huge Algernon fan. I was already like, this band's incredible, because, you know, anything Peter or Joe did, I was always like, this is incredible. And then before that, I was playing with Peter with his solo stuff. Peter and the Piano Eater, I did some shows, you know, with him.
That's
and,
such a good
name. That's awesome. Yes. I've never heard that before.
Peter the Piano Eater. Definitely check out Peter's solo stuff. It's so good. But, you know, once they asked me to join the band, at the time, I wasn't touring or, you know, playing all that much. I was working a lot. Had a girlfriend, a dog. Then it all kind of changed because I was like, wow, this is cool. This is like really good. We could probably like go on tour. And then we did, and it was great. I don't know. It was cool. West Philly, they asked me to come jam, and it all worked and fit very well, and it worked out. And so happy that I went that day to go jam.
I just wanted to ask, because it's always my dream that like all the people in these bands were listening to screamo and hardcore before they just that do the twinkle stuff.
Oh, totally. Yeah, we were all in hardcore bands and screamo bands and, you know, pop punk, all that stuff, of course.
Just for my personal files, what were some of those early bands?
I played in a band with Colin, who was in Algernon, the second guitar player, on some kind of Cadwallader, a band called LeClef. So that was like a screamo band. And then I was in a band called Zoloft, the Rock and Roll Destroyer, that Peter used to be in before me.
What?
So it's all intertwined. Yeah. Yeah. So Like Lions, Joe was in a band called Like Lions, which is really awesome. Super good drumming. That's TJ again playing drums on that stuff. But yeah.
Sick. All right. And so you joined right after the Some Kind of Cadwallader process. And was the Fun EP like right after that?
Yeah, a year later, maybe. I don't even remember. But I remember learning their songs, jamming, and then, you know, starting to write.
Bro, you wrote the legendary frog spit line.
That's it. That's the one.
That's it. That's the one that gets us retweets to this day, is when we make jokes about the frog spit line.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle.
So coming off of Some Kind of Cadwallader and the Fun EP, was there a lot of momentum going into Parrot Flies? Like, was there hype around Philly or online or anything?
Yeah, totally. There was, you know, when we play shows, like, it would be like, how do these people even know who we are? Like, I had no idea. Like, you know, there was lots of people coming to these shows, and I didn't really understand why, but I guess it was all the internet and the demo and people heard it or whatever. But yeah, it seemed like we had a little following, you know, right from my first show, that our record release show in a basement in Philly. And then wherever we would play, there'd be people there to see us, which is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, and every video I've seen online looks like over capacity. Everyone's taking their shirts off because it's too sweaty.
For sure. Yeah. That was the best part of the whole thing. That's why we did it, you know. That's why it was so hard to stop doing it, you know. It was that was the magic. It was the basements and being with all the people and just the energy. It was intense. It was really cool.
I only ever saw y'all once. I saw you at the Marsh House with Ampere.
Cool.
It's like my top 10 like most braggable show moments, I think.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a cool. I mean, I feel like for me too. Played with Ampere. That's like, that's pretty badass, you know?
We can kind of link this back to the snowing one, but like the snowing guys were saying that the band that everyone in Philly who was in a band was like really kind of feeding off of was 1994. I mean, was 1994. I know that you guys did the four-way split with them, but were they like a companion band to Algernon?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We love those guys. Yeah. We used to play shows all the time. We went to Europe together.
Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah. We used to play, you know, their house, in their basement in Lancaster, and straight from the get-go, you know, we were playing shows with them. and just we just got along with them. It just made sense. And, you know, we're all friends, still, and talk still. And it's awesome. I think the drummer from 1994 is, like, living, I think, in maybe Belgium right now. But such a good drummer. And Chris, I see Chris around, too. He comes to Asbury Park sometimes, play shows with his other bands, which are awesome. So, yeah, they were definitely our homies for sure. You know, along with a bunch of other bands. You know, The Ground is Lava. Love those guys. Oh, yeah. Super awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome, awesome dudes. And Monument, we used to play with all the time, who are like such sweethearts. Just, we definitely had those bands that we wanted to play with because it was fun. It wasn't, we were never about getting exposure or opening up for the big band at the big venue. It just, because, you know, we knew what that was already. We knew it wasn't what we wanted. I was like, when I was in Zoloft, that was kind of like what Zoloft was after. I felt like more of a hired musician in that band, which was like weird. But at the time, I was like, 18 years old. It's like, oh, I get the tour. This is great. Can make a little bit of money. Sure. But quickly after that, I went on a four-month tour. It was close to 4 months long. And after that, I was like, I don't want to play shows like this anymore. And I kind of stopped playing music for a few years. And then I started playing again, with Algernon. But we all knew from the get-go that that wasn't what we were after. Music never was, in our minds, like, make us tons of money. And you know what I mean? That was never how we thought.
Were you ever doing
that,
it?
That definitely answers one of our questions.
Yeah, because I want to ask, if Algernon was ever, going for it. Because, it seems like all of your shows and everyone in Philly was aware of your band. And here in Madison, when that happens, the promoter knocks on the door and it's like, hey, do you want to open up for all of these shows and stuff? Was that ever happening? And were you ever thinking about signing to a label or anything?
Definitely. We met people who along the way wanted to put out records, and that was awesome. But in the end, it always kind of made sense to just, and it was less trouble, and we had more control to just do it ourselves, which is more, comfortable for us. What was the question you asked before that?
You totally had a local following in Philly. Were you getting hey, do you want to open up for this bigger punk show, stuff like that?
Yeah, we would play shows like that every now and then, because if it made sense and it was cool and it all lined up right. But that wasn't what we were looking for. Unless, we right before we would go on tour, we need to get money to get a shitty van that we all knew would break down. So we would be like, let's book a weekend of all colleges. And then it's like, okay, cool. And then at the end of the weekend, we made $1,000. That could buy us a van that'll last 2 weeks. Then to the next van, that's how it was with us. We would never, it was more just trying to, we were going for it, but we weren't, for it to make it, or we were just going, we were having fun and we were playing music together, and the energy between us was just awesome, So whenever we could hang out and do something positive, music wise, or just hanging out wise, we were down. But no, it was never okay, let's sit down, we should get on a big show, a big tour, we're gonna go on tour with Stained, it's gonna fucking be cool, everyone's gonna see it, they're gonna buy the merch, I know the guarantee is only $100, but listen, it's gonna be cool, we're gonna follow the tour buses and we'll get in the venues at 1 p.m. sit there, it was because we knew we didn't want that. But at the same time, if one of our friends we know the guys from the Starting, Kenny from the Starting Line, someone like that, his band after the Starting Line asked us to play, and we were like, yeah, totally, but it wasn't, we weren't looking to play big tours because we all knew that it wasn't exactly what it's all cracked up to be.
So far, the thing that's been most surprising about this episode is learning that Kenny from the Starting Line has real emo cred.
Oh, Kenny is so awesome. I love Ken. Yeah, he's super, super good.
He's always seemed really, really cool. Love
super. Yeah, he's from our neck of the woods, the suburbs of Philadelphia.
That's so cool.
He was a big halfway to Holland fan,
That makes me so happy. Oh my god.
Yeah, totally.
So with all that stuff in mind, with like the fact that the band was kind of like sort of self-sustaining in terms of going on tour, and you know, the local hype and like a little bit of light, because I do remember there was kind of like a Tumblr following around y'all, because that was like where I got my main emo stuff, was Tumblr. Did it feel like Paraflies was gonna be like the record for you, like a big record?
We definitely were like, people are gonna hear this and it's gonna be cool. Like, you know, we knew we wanted to make it the best that we could. And we practiced a lot, and we recorded the record Paraflies like basically two times. I was never happy with like how my drums came out. I was super stressed out when we were recording that album too. I was like in school and I had so much shit going on.
I mean, that does tie in a little bit to the other thing we were gonna ask, which is that it seemed like there was so much happening outside the band as well. Because
For sure,
Peter was running Hot Green.
We all had things going on. I was in school. Those dudes were in other bands too, and Joe records music, and you know, we all knew like when we were touring and doing that stuff that we don't want to spend all of our time doing this, you know, because then it's going to get stale. Yeah, we never let it consume us completely.
Were y'all like good though? Like, were you guys like tense about things? Because I mean, if you record the album twice, that's got to be insane for your like camaraderie, I guess.
Yeah, it was definitely intense. You know, I was never happy with, like, pretty much this is how I look at it. Peter and Joe, I think, are like very incredible like musicians, like so good, like way out of my caliber. Okay, so basically when I would try to like write my parts, I would try my best to not play busy, keep it simple. So because I just wanted to compliment Peter and Joe, because I knew that whatever they were going to do was going to be fucking sweet, you know. So I just tried to just compliment what they played and not do anything crazy. As far as, you know, stress, yeah, it was stressful just because of real life. You know, we only had so much time to record. You know, it's when the mics are up, you got to be on. And I never felt like I was on. I mean, anytime I record, I'm like, ugh, why is this bad? Why? I can't believe that. What, you know? And I'm like, I can't do it again. I just never am happy. But yeah, that's so during, you know, while we were making that record, it was fun. We recorded that record, the drums, in a church, and we also recorded in Philly at a warehouse that we all kind of lived at and practiced at. And
it's cool that you keep mentioning like the fact that you were like so perfectionist with your drum parts, because back in the Snowing interview, they mentioned that one of the things people said about Paraflies when it came out was that your drumming was too clean.
Yeah, totally. I agree. I'm not a complicated, like I'm not a super creative drummer. I never have been. I always just like, I wanted to be an Algernon because Peter and Joe I knew were incredible. So I just didn't want to like do too much. I just wanted to keep it simple and, you know, and kind of follow in Nick's footsteps, the way that Nick played, you know, and kind of just driving. But when I recorded, like, you know, the tempos, I was like, what's going on with the tempo? And I just remember being like, oh, well, this is, you know, a lot of people are going to hear this, and it's going to, the drumming is just not good enough. But I feel like that with everything I do, because that's just how I am.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like that undersells, like, the role of the drums on this record, because I feel like a lot of the tone on several songs just would not be the same. Like, the grooves wouldn't work, and the, like, just like several like cymbal splashes just here and there, like it all just kind of really helps to form this cohesive whole. I don't think that I would change any of the drumming on this album.
I wouldn't either.
That's very nice of you to say that. Very, very kind of you. When I look back at it, and we will in a little bit, I nitpick, and I at the time I just wanted to be as good as them, but that wasn't going to happen. So I just tried to stay in the pocket the best I could and let them do their thing, because I knew that's what made sense to me at the time.
One question that I thought was kind of fun to form, because I was looking through your like blog spot and stuff, which is like still up there, it's full of like writing and photos and like really like candid.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, Peter. Just like Peter candid. That. Okay, I'm surprised so I got to look at that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Peter documented a lot of that when we were on the road. I would do some posts sometimes too. But yeah, we at the time it was we felt like we should document it and you know, I remember Peter. We were talking in the van, and he brought up the idea. We should document this, and it was. I'm so glad he did. You know, it's so cool to look back at the pictures and see and know what mics were used when we were recording, and know what drums I used, and you know, because all that information is there. Because you know, Pete did that, and it's. I think that's so cool, and that's Pete. You know, Pete, when he wants to do something, he does it, and I'm you know very thankful that he. Did that because now I can look back on all the memories, you know.
Yeah,
really cool.
And like it's weird because it's like, why aren't bands doing this now? Instead of they're just sending like memes on their Twitter and that's how they're documented, you know. And like this is very like lovingly like curated. Like it's like, hey, just woke up in fucking Wyoming, there was a dog in the house that was really cute, morale is pretty high, here's the rest of our tour dates. And like that's so
totally
that's so much better. And like that's cool that was Peter and him like being very intentional about trying to like document the band, because I mean there aren't a lot of bands from this era that did that. So
yeah,
so
we knew like when we were touring and playing, and it felt special. Like it all just felt so good. And it was like, wow, like we're going to Delaware and the show's sold out. What? Huh? And then it was like 6 months later, oh, we're playing in Germany and there's 100 people here. What? You know, it's like, it was crazy how fast it spread, you know, and it was, I still looked back at it like, how the fuck did that happen? How, you know, I feel very lucky to be able to be a part of it.
Yeah and like especially like Algernon went to Europe how many times, like once or twice, or was it
two times? We went once with the Teenage Cool Kids and we went with not 1994.
I don't know, is it weird to say it doesn't sound like many DIY bands get over there? They just kind of do like,
I mean, I you know, I it is tough, you know. You have to find someone who's going to be able to book these shows. You gotta figure out a lot of stuff in order to do it, but it was like so unbelievable. Like we've never gotten treated so well, you know. It just, you make money and you get food and everyone's so sweet and they give you places to stay. Europe is the place to go, and from, you know, I think it is for a DIY punk band. It was so much fun.
Cool.
And it was crazy.
That's always what I've heard.
Yeah, it was incredible, like unbelievable. You know, as opposed to sometimes, you know, in the States, you get to a show and they say "fuck you" or whatever it might be. You know what I mean? It's so different. And also, these venues that we'd play at, like, were like squats that were like these big buildings, but they were like funded by the government. So like they had money to put on like proper shows, and they were really just like parties. Like once the show ended, it was like, okay, DJ set. It was like party all night long. Like, unbelievable, so cool. One of the best times of my life being in Europe with those guys. So much fun.
So we're getting to the record now. The album comes out. What kind of response do you remember?
I think, yeah, when the album came out, people liked it. Personally, I was like, man, I don't know. I could have done this better.
Did you see did you see like new people talking about the band, or like places that you never saw it on the internet being talked about?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember playing in Europe before the record even came out, and we were playing a new song that we barely knew, and someone somehow saw a video of that song and knew the lyrics. And that's when I was like, okay, this is like, how is this even, what, you know? So yeah, I'm definitely people were stoked, and there's more people to come to the show. Yeah, I mean, I just remember the response being positive.
Yeah. Ellie, I'll let you talk about where you saw it for the first time, but I saw it just on like a lot of Blogspot blogs that put up like full albums, and I also saw Joyce Manor talking about it, who I just like discovered that year as well.
If Cut and Paste was around back then,
that's where I got it, actually. Cut and Paste was
Yeah, I think Cut and Paste was the first place I saw it too. Yeah, it was kind of like all over Twinkle Tumblr,
I never did Tumblr. I don't know. I just never did it. So I don't even know.
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of Twinkle Daddies, the Last FM boards were pretty stoked on it too.
I do remember Last FM. That was cool.
Yeah,
I remember seeing people stoked on that. That was cool. That was really, really nice to see.
I had no idea Joyce Manor talked about it though. Like,
we did a little tour with them.
Yeah. There was like a tour that I saw.
Oh, that's
Joyce Manor. We did a tour with them. It was awesome. We played with them like on the West Coast, and that was super fun.
I cannot believe I missed that. Very upset. Did this album get compared to Some Kind?
Not that I remember. I don't remember people ever being saying like what do you mean compared to like people being like it's not as good as this or it sounds kind of like what? How do you mean?
I only like the demo like type people, you know?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's always going to be people who say like I've seen that on the Last FM. You know, like someone had mentioned, I liked the demo, or, you know, I'm sure I've seen that. But as far as, you know, no one ever said I don't remember anything in particular where someone was like, your demo was better and this is crap. And I'm like, and I would be like, I'd probably feel the same exact way you feel, you know?
Aw. one of the things I remember seeing a lot was that, like, this album had songs, and someone was complaining that Some Kind had like less structure, so it was better.
Okay, like, Some Kind of Catwater had like was a little jammier,
mm-hmm.
whereas I felt like Parrotflies, at least like my drumming, I like pop, I want people's heads to bop, you know, and I just I just tried my best to make it sound poppy and fun.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's why I think Parrotflies is better. It feels a lot more focused.
Yeah,
and there are the jam
definitely
parts,
definitely grew as a band. We definitely molded together more and felt like we could write better. And you know, like Algernon was never like someone comes in with a song and we jam on it. It wasn't really like it was more like someone, you know, Joe might come with like a riff. And then we'll write the song while we're all there. So that's it was a long process because it's hard, you know, singer-songwriter, it's a totally different thing, you know, where someone could be like, okay, this is how the song goes, but there's three people, you know, who all had to figure it all out and talk it out. But that was the beauty of it.
Sweet.
Right. Are we ready to get into the track by track?
Let's do it.
All right. So Springin' Leaks, I think this is like, just a really great opener because it starts off with that kind of like subdued groove, like kind of like almost like a ramshackle groove, and then Joe comes in with that trademark twinkle, that right, and then it just like all hell breaks loose, like it just sounds like so rowdy and excited and upbeat.
For that song, I tried to just, like I said, keep it simple, keep it basic, you know, keep the energy up. That's the vibe. Like, the end of that song, there's a long jam.
Yeah.
And that's like, I love that because I was always like, you know, I'd always be like, Joe, what the fuck are you playing? That's ridiculous. Like everything that Joe played, it doesn't matter. Like everything, I was like, whoa, what the fuck? Play that over and over again, please. And I would do that all the time. And that's how that part came about. You know, I was always into being like, oh, can I just play like the same drum beat for like 3 minutes straight? You just do that thing you did, you know, and then come over to me so I can hit your guitar with my drumstick at some point. You know, anything that Joe did, it was so goddamn good.
That's such a memorable part about the song is that it just keeps going and going, and then it eventually just goes straight into Pitfall. But like, like extended outro.
I think it bookends with Cruisin' really well too, like because both of those are just like kind of more jammy tracks.
Yeah, that Cruisin', that's the last song on the record. That song was so much fun to play because that was just such a rocker. Joe just fucking rocked. I would just be watching Joe. I'd be like, oh my god, you see this? But that was most of the time. I was just like, damn, that's awesome.
This was the album that was recorded with one guitar, right?
Yes, this was. But there, you know, Joe layered other guitars and stuff like
well,
that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, that the Parrotflies was all Joe on guitar.
that's insane, because some of the interplay with the guitar is like really interesting. Like,
yeah, it's unbelievable. So good.
So we pivoting to Pitfall now.
Let's do it. My favorite track on the album.
I pull up the lyrics so I can like hear the parts like in conjunction with the lyrics, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, this song has really good lyrics. I mean, obviously
the lyrics are very poetic for like a very fast emo song, I guess. Like,
oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah, Peter's lyrics, I mean, he hasn't written anything that's everything, all his lyrics, literally. It's so, his lyrics are incredible.
Yeah, I mean, like,
so good.
This song could easily just be straight up about like someone playing Pitfall, the video game, but it,
totally.
But it's also like, it's clearly more to it than that. Just like, you have insulted all the mouths salivating at your slip. Like, it's just, I don't know. There's like imagery to it and everything. It's just masterful, really.
Yeah, I feel like he was going for having people create the story in their mind about what it means. I really like that about his lyrics.
The pitiful Pitfall pun is really good too.
Oh yeah, clever. Yeah. He's so clever. Peter, have you guys ever met Peter?
So I saw Peter and Peter and Craig at Two Piece Fest Chicago before.
Oh,
I like,
so good. I love Peter and Craig.
Yeah, it's, I was thoroughly confused and
I
just
am
like,
Peter, this is Craig. I am, oh, so good.
Yeah,
bringing back the memories. Yeah, Peter's a very clever person. He's the kind of guy that, you know, if you see him walking, he's looking at the trees, pondering. Brain's always going, always working, always very, very creative. Special
do
guy.
Do you have any specific memories of recording this song? Well,
Pitfalls?
After the train finishes.
Oh, yeah, there's the train. Bye, train. Any memories of recording this song? I remember being in a church and the drums sounding incredible because I was in a just giant church. And I remember recording it. We were in Philly at a church, and I'm sure I was stressed out because that's how Tank is. I'm a stressed out guy. I'm stressed. Sometimes I get stressed. So but as far as the song goes, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I remember anything specifically about it. I remember writing it with the guys and being like, this song's badass. This is really fucking good. And I don't feel like that about all the songs on the record, but Pitfall, I really do love that song. It's fucking awesome. I love it.
Preservatives, I think, is I think this is like one of the groovier bops on this album.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
And this is one of those moments I want to like spotlight your drumming, because I think like that ending like groove just does not work without like, you know, the syncopation, you know? This song's really good. I think I would actually call this like my second favorite song on the record.
I feel personally. Like I think I might be there with you on that one. I really, really enjoy this song too. It was really fun to play drums to and write the parts to. It's definitely took a while to write. I remember it took a while to write and figure it all out, as did all the songs really, besides, you know, a couple that was, but
it's like super like playful. And
totally,
my friend and I were talking about Algernon, and he like joked about them being like a beach emo band, and this would totally like that is totally the vibe of a lot of
Shore Style. That's right, Shore Style Algernon. That's right, that's how we do it here. But yeah, that would, yeah, for sure. There's also, I think, another song, I Want to Go to the Beach, that we did.
Yeah.
We did that was a very beachy tune as well. That was, I think we wrote that way earlier than we wrote Preservatives, but I really liked how that song came out.
Those Dads tracks aren't a diss against Algernon, right?
I'm out of the loop.
The band Dads, they have those songs. If your song has the word beach in the title, I won't listen to it, and then Let's Go to the Beach.
No, it had nothing to do with Dads.
I just thought it might be funny if there was just like ancient beef.
Right. No beef. We didn't have beef with bands. We just, you know, we just wanted to rock.
That makes perfect sense, because like every band only has nice things to say about Algernon.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, we're good dudes, you know. We really are. Yeah. We are. Like, we always were, you know. Like I said, we weren't, it wasn't a competition just to whose band's better. It was never about that. Like, this is about like having fun and having a good time, you know. And I think that's why it was fucking awesome. And that's why we wrote the songs and played these crazy shows, is because that's what our focus was on.
I do want to say about the first two songs, and just so I can get out there, Peter's bass sounds gigantic.
Oh, I love the bass. Oh, and when we would play live too, you'd play out this PV, it just sounded so fucking good all the time. I love this bass tone.
Yeah, it's
such good bass tone.
And I think to like just keep talking about Peter's bass playing, and like playing alongside like what Joe is doing has got to be like very delicate, because you don't want to get lost in what he's doing. And I feel like Peter's bass parts are like perfectly like groovy, and they don't like, they're not like showy, but they're also just there the entire time. And he's not just playing root notes too, he's like moving around just like the perfect amount.
He is an incredible bass player. He's great at every instrument. He's a great drummer. He's literally like can play any instrument very, very well.
Peter's the man.
Yeah, Peter is definitely.
All right, we're going into Parrot Flies then.
We're going into Parrot Flies.
All right.
This song I remember. I still feel like it's been a little while to listen, but I remember being like, "Oh, drums! I don't know. Not happy about the drums." Still,
you and kick it wasn't off about the sound of them.
You started off.
I do. That's right.
You set it off. I do. A la That's right. Yeah. And this is one of the more chill tracks on the album too.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah, definitely chill.
It's almost like a hip hop beat, kind of.
Yeah, I was definitely going for like a pocket groove, something that was different than your normal, regular old standard. Yeah, I remember, you know, it had like a almost like a funky vibe to it. And then I was, how are they gonna make this sound cool? And they did, because they're good.
This seems to have like some of the more personal lyrics on the album. Whatever story is being told here, it's a little bit obtuse. Whatever story is being told here seems to be like extremely personal.
Yeah, it definitely, I'm sure is.
I feel bad because, like, I really like these first four songs, but If It Kills Me is, like...
You're just waiting to get to this one.
I mean, this one's kind of like my holy grail of the emo revival. Like,
how does this... I don't even remember how this one starts. Where is this... I, like, don't remember. I must have called... Okay, those lyrics are cool. I think that's about a childhood friend, maybe. I don't know.
To me, the one that the bit that just cements this song is like Peter's scream leading into the guitar solo.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah,
just so amazing.
He can definitely when he belts, it's just like
it's just impacting and affecting. And there was, like, a period, like, my freshman year of college where I would just, like, listen to this on a loop, for sure.
I know that we've talked about it before on the podcast, but you've specifically said that, like, this song, we call this music emo, but, like, If It Kills Me is very uplifting.
Algernon, in general, it just feels like an extremely uplifting band to me. Like, I know a lot of the other bands, especially of this era, had very, just... kind of like a depressive tone, but this one is like, I mean, I know I don't care if it's not healthy, I don't care if it kills me, but you know, it kind of has like the same spirit as Motivational Song.
Totally.
If it feels right and fuck it up. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I remember you know, listening to the lyrics and hearing them for the first time and being like, whoa, is this what this means? Wait a minute, this has got to be, is this what he's talking about? Because I was so close with Peter that I would never ask, you know. I'd never be like, well, what was that song? Was that song about me? You know, was that? I think those three songs are about me, and you know, I would never do that. But his lyrics are incredible, everything, and in his new band, Yankee Bluff, he can write. He's good. He's very creative.
I guess maybe we'll ask here, but like, were songs brought to the table from Joe, and then Peter writes the lyrics and the vocal melody, or how did that go?
Yeah, so Peter wrote all the lyrics. Pretty sure Peter wrote all the lyrics and the vocal melodies. I'm sure Joe helped too. I mean, Joe has so many great ideas, and he's a recording engineer. So you know, I'm sure he produced, you know, Peter, you know, and both of them were doing it together. As far as, you know, bringing songs to the table, it wasn't so much like that. It was more like Joe would be like, I was fucking around on this riff. And then if we're feeling good that day, we could fuck around the riff and then we'll start writing the song together. It was always done together. Not always. There was one song that I recorded the drums first without any music being written at all. So I just recorded a drum track with no music.
Which song is that?
That's Simulation.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, so from that song. Summer Singles. Yes. So that was a little different. That was a different approach. But usually it was, you know, let's get in the room together and work this out. And then, you know, we would push record and record the jams and see what we liked and what we didn't like. Then, you know, talk about it and then, you know, eventually form a structure. Sometimes that happened fast. Usually it took a while, though.
It puts us through to Glenwood Avenue, which is, I think, one of the catchiest songs on the record. Would you say that, Kyle?
Yeah, I always saw this as like the beginning of a little bit of like a cool down, because I mean, yeah. If It Kills Me, Paraflies, Preservatives, Pitfall, like those are all songs that like you would scream. And Glenwood Avenue, right. I mean, you would scream
making at that one part. Secrets.
Yeah,
you got me. I'm ready. Let's go. Algernon Reunion, me and you guys. Oh. Let's do it.
Yes.
This is gonna sound awful, but I purposefully went and sought after the same bass that Peter has. So I mean, hypothetically,
I almost like bought the same bass. Wait, what bass? Wait, which one are you talking about? Are you talking about Joe's bass? Because Peter used to use Joe's bass. What bass are you talking about?
It's a Made in Japan P bass.
Yes. Oh, it's so good. I just saw one on Reverb. I almost bought it, and it was all fucked up like Peter's was, or like it's actually Joe's, but Peter used it.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean the one that I got from Reverb was modestly fucked up. It's not quite there yet, but it's like easily the bass I've been looking for my entire life, just because it's everything I've ever wanted.
I love the Made in Japan. They're great.
Yeah, those
bases are fantastic.
Like, still thunderous.
Wait, so. Which one is the bass that Pete let John use?
That's probably that one, then.
That's the one that we would normally be using. I mean, I remember that's the bass I would always say.
Because in the Snowing episode, Joe made him go out and buy the Algernon bass or something. And he said it was, like, a very specific thing. But, like, John played a jazz bass, I think.
Okay.
Live.
Okay.
Yeah, the bass that... You have it's got like the finish that like it comes off really easy. It's like a wrap. It's not like wood, right?
Yeah.
Those are awesome. They're so cool when they're all fucked up looking too.
I agree. All right. So Glenwood Avenue, though. Any other thoughts or memories around this one? Did you guys play this one live that much?
No. I don't remember playing this one all that much. You know, just trying to keep up, man. I just trying to keep up with these guys. I'm telling you, like, that's what it was. I was just trying to keep up with these guys. That's like what I keep thinking. Like, oh, well, what do I remember that song? Oh, yeah, trying to fucking keep up there. Keep up with those two crazy fucking players. I think the drums sound cool on that, you know, that song too. There's like a break where it's kind of like chill, but I'm going with like a pretty driving beat. It's almost like a... I don't know what inspired that part exactly, but yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, it's kind of a blur, you know, to go back and think about it. I don't really remember, you know, exactly what it was like recording it, because usually, like, I just recorded drums a few weeks ago, and that's all a blur to me already. Like, I don't even, you know, it's because when I'm in the studio, I'm just like very like in a different world. I just like, I mean, I'm trying my hardest, you just know,
rolling through like a tank. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm more of a live drummer. I'm not the best recorded drummer. I really, you know, feel like that's when I'm at my best. But recording is just like kind of stressful for me. Mm. It's great. It's fun. It's cool to document. You know, stuff.
What Algernon song was your favorite one to play live?
My favorite song to play live was probably, and you're going to laugh, Stimulation. Just kidding. No, it was.
Oh, okay. Was it the ownership aspect?
I think because like, it was. What's that?
Was it like the ownership aspect? Because you said you wrote the drums first before anything.
Not at all. It was the naturalness of playing it. Like that song to me is just come. I sweat that beat. I sweat that structure and how that song is structured and the way I'm playing it is like I just love. That's like I feel so comfortable playing that type of tempo and vibe and just you know. I just always liked playing it, but and I don't think it had to do with, you know, they all helped write structure. Well, you know, they were all there when I was recording those drums, but you know,
that song is like very poppy, and that's what you said that you like, and you just
That's always what I was going for. I've always been into like you know, and we all are you know, and we're also into all sorts of other shit. But when it came to like what we wanted to play, usually we were into playing hard rock and pop, and you know. Stuff that was you know catchy. Hopefully we could think of a cool hook, you know.
Yeah,
it's like that's it, what we were after. It's just like one, it was wanted to play like summer music, you know.
Yeah.
Open your windows,
beach,
you know,
beach emo,
beach music.
Yeah,
beach
leave emo. Your socks on the beach, you know,
beach mo.
Beach mo. Oh my god, Shore style beach mo. Are you fucking kidding me? This is like this whole thing. This is next level. Now we're diving deep into this. I'm gonna take that. I'm gonna use that later.
Uniform,
one of my favorites.
This is one of your favorites?
Yeah.
This
cool.
I mean, obviously, I love every track on this album, but personally, I would like
beach emo. Got the fucking seagulls in the background.
Yeah.
There. Yeah. See. Looking at the water. Got my wetsuit on. Jersey Shore, eating some sort of French fry. I'm living life out here in nature. No, I'm actually right across right now. My the place where I practice, there's a show happening, about to happen right now. I'm looking right now. Let's see if there's anybody here. There's my truck, and there's people here. Yeah, there's people here. There's a show here tonight.
Oh, sick.
But yeah, Uniform. I am a fan of this song. I think like the lyrics are like very memorable. Like the whole cool shirt, cool shoes, short tie, and then like
yeah,
and then.
Yeah,
smart shoes, smart hair. I think that was something I used to say.
Smart,
like literally. I think that's where that lyric came from. I used to say things like, "Yeah, and he had the smart shoes on, and she had the smart haircut, and they had smart things to say."
This is the one about you, then.
They're all about me. We're secretly, the songs are all about me, and it's revealed now. No,
I mean,
they're not.
Lick the windows is like such a esque opening line, you know?
Oh, yeah, totally.
But then there's that like acoustic guitar like lick in the middle of the
song.
Oh, that part is so good. That's like one of my favorite parts in the whole entire record.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just sonically sounds so good too.
Yeah, and it comes out of nowhere and just sneaks up on me every time, and I'm just like, I don't know. It's such a memorable song.
Yeah. Yep.
You got some show banner.
Yeah, I'm checking it out. I'm checking it out right now.
Ask them if they've ever heard the E word.
Hey, have you ever heard the E word? What? The E word podcast?
No.
Here, you want to talk to Luke? Luke's in my new band. This Luke's in Magic Ghrelin.
What is this?
And they also play in Teenage Halloween. This is Ellie. Here's Luke. Talk to Luke a second. Explain to him about the show. Who's playing the show? They want to know.
Oh, wait. Who's playing the show?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Royal Roads, Squat, Full Body, and Brut from Rochester.
Yeah, that's Luke. List them as a guest. One of the singers in Magic Ghrelin. Oh, Luke's getting the juice out. He's getting my kids' juice packs from the back of my Suburban right now.
This is sick.
Those are the honest ones. Those are honest. Yep.
Oh my god, those ones are
not
those
too
are good.
Many.
I drink them
not
as an
too
adult.
Many, Luke. Oh, they're so good. they're so good. I keep them in my truck, in the back, just for you know kids like Luke when he gets thirsty. Just kidding. So I don't know. Yeah. So what was next? I'm sorry.
Sad is the next song.
Oh, sad. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That was cool. That was a fun one too. That was chiller vibes for sure.
Mm-hmm. Call it what it really is. I mean, I feel like, yeah, after If It Kills Me, this record goes into cool down mode for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Glenwood Avenue was catchy. Uniform and Sad are both like chill jams. And again, like the grooves are coming out. And I think like when people talk about emo, like they focus a lot on, you know, the twinkles, or at least that's there. Well, they focus a lot on the twinkles, but like the grooves are here. Like this. Yeah, this is like a danceable section.
I was just trying to just keep it simple. I was just like trying to lay back and try to do as good as I could with what I was playing with. But thank you. That's super kind of you.
I mean, I think that helps in the sense that like when you're keeping things on track in that way, it allows like, you know, the guitar is nuts. But if you have like the stability of the drumming, it makes it like accessible.
That, yeah, like that's like, I knew that from once I joined the band, and they knew too, like they knew like what kind of drummer I was. Like I never wanted to be in playing busy, crazy shit. First of all, I'm not good enough to play busy, crazy stuff. Second of all, I don't really find it fun. You know, I love to just like be able to drink a few beers, smoke a joint, and then play the set and not, you know, care too much. You know, I just want to have fun and rock. You know, I don't want to have to think about what I'm doing so much. And that, you know, in all honesty is where that comes from, and why from the beginning I wanted to keep it simple and let Joe be the one that's like, because if I followed all those guitar parts and figured out all those timings, it wouldn't be what I wanted to do. I feel like, sure, I could sit there and try to think of the craziest parts, but I think because Peter's playing these driving bass lines, like why would I do that, you know? That's just, yeah, it just happened naturally like that, you know. But we were all like about like bands like Owls and, you know, all, you know, those crazy math band, like, you know, Toe and all those, you know, bands that are so incredible. But I knew for me that's not what I could do or wanted to do, you know. I wanted to just let Joe and Peter shine, and I think that's what we accomplished.
The next one is Chewed Up and Spit Out in a Bowl. Which, yeah, it's
like what was the last song that you just
sad?
It was sad. I fucking forget how that starts. Where is that? Does that start with drums? It starts with like drums and a driving bass line, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, that song's about me. Just kidding. I'm not.
Chewed Up and Spit Out is one of those, it's under 2 minutes long. It starts off like that really like sudden, like,
and Pete's yelling, wrote a book about living in paradise, like,
yeah,
that,
yeah.
Just, like really intense.
Totally. I know what you're talking about. That I don't think I was completely happy with how I did on that song, but
no,
because
after this chill section, it like goes into like, I mean, I wouldn't call it like aggressive, but it's more anthemic, you know.
Yeah.
Like it's a very immediate song.
Totally.
I mean, what do you do when you're down and out and on an island the size of a nipple? so evocative. It's just weird to me that you aren't happy with your drum performance, because like I think the groove is here, but you pit, like there's this sense that there's a lot of energy to the song, but it's also kind of subdued.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think the bass helps with that, because the bass is, again, very driving on this track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. If we should have recorded this record three times, damn it. You know.
Tank. our mission for this episode is to get you to be positive about your drum parts.
I'm positive about the drum parts. I'm just, you know, my performance, I feel like, is a little lackluster in that song. But, you know, I'm hard on myself.
I mean, I get it. Whenever I listen to this podcast, like, back over, I'm like, I sound like a fucking idiot, yeah, like, 90% of the time.
Like, Tank, I am totally in the same headspace on you, but, like, seriously, this record means the world to Ellie and I, probably all 1,000 people that are going to listen to this. 1,000
That's fucking amazing, and that's incredible. I mean, that's why I'm so happy we did it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool. I get emails all the time, people still interested in this band, and it's just like, I can't believe that we like left a footprint, because that was the goal, to be remembered. Hmm. You know, and the fact that we are is so like, it blows my mind. That's all I ever wanted to be, you know, in any band, you know, to leave a mark. And I think when the band ended, we left on a super positive high point.
Yeah,
where 100%. It wasn't like, man, and there's like not as many people coming to the shows. Like, we should stop. They had nothing to do with anything like that.
Yeah,
it was just, you know, it was cool.
So we got 2 songs left.
We do. We have Loose Cannons and Cruisin'. Loose Cannons, another one of those like real upbeat numbers.
Yes.
Before we head into Cruisin'. I mean, I hate to keep harping on the lyrics, but like,
no, it deserves it. I think.
I mean,
the
imagery here is just unreal.
Yeah. Incredible. I'm telling you, like, anything Peter does, it doesn't matter if he's sitting and drawing a picture. It's like, when he's done, you're going to be like, oh, my God, like, that changed my life. Like, everything the guy does is just how, you know, that's why I joined the band, you know? It's like, damn, this fucking guy, both of them, you know? It's just everything they do, the lyrics, and Peter's only gotten better, which I thought was impossible. But, you know, all the lyrics that he's written for Yankee Bluff and Dogs on Acid, you know, mm-hmm. were so, like, the lyrics for Dogs on Acid were fucking incredible.
Yeah. And they were like kind of
incredible.
Like, and like so, at the same like, time, they were like kind of like weirder than Algernon got too.
Yeah.
Which totally. Is surprising to me, because Algernon's got some like borderline surrealist like lyrics.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I mean, Peter, I think, was all about having, you know, people kind of, decide what the song was about, you know.
Yeah,
and,
like,
and I think that's cool.
Impressionistic style,
totally. And then Dogs on Acid was definitely a little more straight to the point. I feel like, you know, you can kind of hear what
more of like a pop structure. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I love that Dogs on Acid record. It's amazing. I still listen to it. It's so good. Love it.
How do you feel about Loose Cannons?
About what?
About Loose Cannons.
I like that song. I do. I think it's cool. Am I happy with my performance on that song? No.
You're the first part of it.
I know. And that's the part that's like, damn it. It's just, you know, it's honest. It's honestly how I feel, you know? I listen to it and I'm like, oh, I can't listen to it and just be like, oh, this. I can listen to the lyrics and be like, whoa, and the guitar. But always in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, shit, I could have done that better. Oh, the tempo. What the fuck was I? The tempo. I drank too much coffee, not enough coffee, you know, but that's just me. That's just how I am. That's how I am with my business. Like I own a business and a store, and I make the things that I sell, and I'm very particular and a perfectionist when it comes to, you know, like I make soap, you know, I make soap and I have a soap store. That's how I support, you know, my family, my 3 kids. I have 3 kids, 2 boys and a girl. And my wife and I, you know, started this business and took that same approach, that DIY ethic approach, kind of like being in a punk band, starting small and then working your way up. And somehow it worked. Thank goodness. I think it's all from being and growing up, being in bands with people like Peter and Joe, who just like just had such DIY ethic. And when I was in that band, it really made me like realize like this is the way to fucking do it. This is the only way to fucking do it, you know. At least for me at the time, it was the most fun way to do it, you know. But yeah, no, I think that song's cool, you know.
Making and selling soap. You're like a wholesome Tyler Durden.
That's what I'm going for. All the soap I make, it's made out of 100% human fat. So you just, I get the human fat. No, I don't use the human fat like they do in the movie. But I do get that question sometimes. What you should do, and I'll plug this real quick. I own a store called Big Spoon Little Spoon Naturals. BigSpoonLittleSpoonNaturals.com, BSLSN.co. And that's all the stuff that I make and all the products I make. And we have a store in Asbury Park on the boardwalk in Convention Hall. So if anyone out there lives near New Jersey or is in Asbury Park, please come visit your friend Tank. I'll be playing the hottest emo tunes there are. You'll see some drums on the fucking walls. I'll probably be buying drums online. I figured I'd mention that.
Do you have any like CBD infused stuff? I know that's like hot right now.
Yeah,
Kyle, you broke edge and now you're all about.
No,
I've experimented with the CBD stuff. Yeah. I can't tell if it works. I use a lot of hemp oil.
Yeah.
You know, I use that in like all my soaps, but it took me like, you know, a good year of wasting lots of money to learn how to make this. You know, learn how to make soap. But now I don't mess up anymore, so it's pretty good. Not messing up is good. But yeah, I've experimented a little bit, but it's pretty costly too to get, you know, you got to get it from someone you trust and,
yeah,
you know, all that.
The last song then, Cruisin'?
That's probably my favorite one on the record.
It stands out so much because it doesn't sound like the rest of, I mean, first of all, it's like using proper chords and stuff most of the song, which is like not like the rest of the album.
Right.
I mean, I feel also like I said earlier, it kind of bookends with Springing Leaks in that it's more of like a just a straight jam. But, you know, it kind of like finishes out the journey of the record. You like built up to this crescendo with If It Kills Me, chilled out for a little bit, two bangers, and then Cruisin', you know?
Yeah, that song was so much fun to play, too. I mean, that riff that Joe plays is just, in fact, I love playing to that kind of vibe. And that song just, I love that song. Always will. That's, you know, I look back at that song, I'm like, yeah, I did. That one I did pretty good on. You know, I feel good about that song.
I feel like the guitar tone on this track is different.
I can see that for sure. Yeah, it definitely has more of like a, I don't want to say like cock rock.
There's more gain on it, it sounds
like.
For
sure, totally.
Yeah.
The lead guitar in the intro is like, I don't know, it's like, it's something like reminiscent of radio rock, I guess. Like, I don't know how
totally
to describe it.
That's exactly what I would say too. I mean, and that's probably, I was probably like, what's that? That sounded like something, something lame, but let's make it fucking awesome, you know? And like, you know, that was, we were always kind of like that. Let's do something really kind of dumbed down here, but let's make it really fucking cool and throw a wrench in it. So it doesn't sound so stock, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, that song kind of has that vibe where it's like, well, that's kind of, is this a generic thing? But then, you know, the wrench got thrown in there and it fucked it up a little bit and made it a little more, you know, stylistic.
I mean, I'd say that's what defines like Algernon's whole like discography.
That's an awesome thing to say. I feel like that's what I want people to say, you know?
Well, just because, I mean, I feel like y'all were doing a lot of stuff that, like, eventually became commonplace, but it's impossible to replicate because, your sensibility was so off-kilter.
Right, totally. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I really like the end of Cruisin' because it fades out and then it comes back with, like, this, like, Glenn Branca, Sonic Youth-esque.
Oh,
like,
yeah. The guitar playing on that song is, like, so fucking good. He's in the band Hop Along.
Yeah.
And he kills it in that band. I just saw them. They played in Asbury Park. And I brought I brought all the kids to go see them. And it was fucking incredible. That band is so fucking good. Francis is she's so good. I just, you know.
Yeah.
It's great. His guitar playing in that band is incredible too. And but you see what Joe can do, you know, in Algernon, you know, and then it's like, but he knows what to do in the certain, he's got great taste.
Another part of like the disconnect between Algernon and other bands is that with like this guitar style, people always end up getting locked into, oh, the riff, you know, like,
sure.
And it seemed like you and Joe and Peter were less focused on the riff and more like making everything cohere into a texture, which is why this record works. And again, in my opinion, a little bit better than Some Kind, because like it's focused. There's not one thing that really stands out more than the other. It all kind of is like the whole is more than the sum of its parts, you know?
Totally. I see exactly what you're saying. I think,
yeah,
you know, we grew as a band those years, you know, after, like, you know, when it came to the writing that record and practicing, you know, we grew as a band, and we wanted to do something different, but also, you know, something that was a little bit more focused, less you know, production stuff, and more just, you know, let's capture this. And because Some Kind of Catwalader was like there's a lot of stuff, you know, that was added, you know, that was almost like Algernon Catwalader wasn't a band for that was playing like tons of shows and stuff when they were writing that record, you know. So I you know, and production wise, if you can kind of hear it, you know, it was kind of like a musical project for Joe. He took a long time recording that record, and you know, with Paraphys, it was a little different. We were on a time constraint. We couldn't, because we all had jobs and we all, you know, needed to do other things in our lives. We you know, didn't have that kind of time to spend on making the record. I would have loved to be like, yeah, we're going, you know, to a private island and we're going to write this record for the next month. You know, if that was, then it could have been totally different, but who knows, you know?
Right.
I definitely remember everything feeling rushed, you know, let's do this, you know?
Yeah.
But that's all right.
So if it seems like we're like already at the close here, yeah. Like,
I wish I could tell you more about the songs. I feel like the other guys could, but
no, you know.
I hope I did okay.
You're a wonderful guest, Tank.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very kindly. You two are fabulous as well.
Aww.
I'm honored that someone wants to talk to me. I saw your message and I was like, of course. Yes, please.
Well, there's the thing where like some people in bands have moved on to other bands, you know, they aren't very nostalgic for it, which is one of like my closing questions. Like,
I'm super nostalgic.
Doyle from Grown Ups, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Joe and Peter, like, are they nostalgic for Algernon?
I think so. I think, you know, I don't think they're quite as nostalgic as I am about it, you know. But for me, you know, it was like a completed part of my life, that it was something I always wanted to do. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's as nostalgic. When I talk to them about it, like, I saw Peter a couple weeks ago in Philly and we hung out and went to a bar, and it's nothing but positive feels, like, you know, for sure. And hopefully we can all get in the same room together soon and hang out. But it's tough. Everyone's busy, you know.
Yeah.
Joe's got everything going on, and
yeah,
it's tough to get everyone together, but it'll happen eventually.
Yeah. So
yeah,
I guess along with that, like, the repress has happened.
Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that happened. I'm like in shock. I can't believe that they sold. I can't believe, because I'm surprised that people still give a shit.
Oh, when whoever posted from the Facebook account, like, big announcement tomorrow, like, the internet exploded because everyone thought it was like a reunion, which everyone.
It seems unlikely now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time I post something, someone's usually like, oh, fuck you, you know.
Oh, so it's you?
Together. Yeah, yeah, that's okay. Me. Facebook, I do the posts on Facebook.
Interesting.
And, yeah. And, is that? No, you guys got in contact with me through Instagram, right?
Yeah, I DM'd you, yeah.
Okay. Add me on Instagram, soapmaking_tank. You'll see some beautiful soaps, my beautiful children, and my beautiful wife.
You're on there playing drums, too.
Yeah.
Which is fun. For some reason, I love following drummers on Instagram because they're just like always like practicing, and I think that's like more inspiring than someone just like shredding on their guitar. But it seems like drummers are so intense about just like rehearsing.
I mean, if you've listened to Tank like this entire podcast, he's just always been like, "Oh yeah, that other person's drumming, insane." Like,
it's true though.
It's like the passion and love you have for the craft is just like,
I love everything about drums. I can talk about drums all day long, you know. And but there was, you know, a time like the past, like this is recent that I've gotten back into it. Like now is like I'm back into playing drums again, and I'm getting all sorts of cool vintage gear, you know, and it's awesome. And that's what when I was in a band, that's how I used to make money. I would buy sets and fix them up and sell them for, you know, make a little bit of a profit. So I'd have, you know, $20 for a week long tour or whatever, you know, I love it. I love drums. I love watching drummers, anything that has to do with drums. Just, I'm a nut. I have a shirt on with a drum set on it right now. I wore it 2 days in a row because I like this shirt so much. That's why I wore it. My son has a shirt. My daughter has a shirt. Both my sons and my daughter have the same drum shirt as well. Yeah, very into drums. They're all going to be drummers. They have the rhythm in their blood. Less is more, I tell them.
Aw.
Who's your favorite drummer?
Ringo Starr.
That makes a lot of sense given what you said about how you approach drumming in Algernon.
Yeah, Ringo Starr is like my favorite, like everything, you know. And so many people are always like when I do say that, what, Ringo? Ringo's not good. Like, you don't know. You don't know yet. You'll figure it out. You know?
It's not that he's not good. It's that he's doing something different than John what Bonner. Other drummers in Beatles do. Yeah.
He has a very specific style, and he played for the songs. He knew, I gotta play because I'm in a band with John Lennon. This guy's fucking incredible. You know, I'm not gonna play paradiddles all day long. You know, I'm gonna play what's right for the song. But he had such style, the way he played and the way he hit the drums. Always, you know, since I was a little kid, was always inspired by Ringo Starr. My dad was a drummer. He taught me how to play drums.
Awesome.
And you know, that's probably my other favorite drummer is my dad.
Aw.
Yeah.
So the end of the band, like you said earlier, it seemed like everything went out on a high note. And that's how I remember when, like, the news started coming in that Algernon was breaking up and they were playing their last shows. People were, like, heartbroken. But it seemed like also kind of like this euphoric thing to be going to your last shows.
We it wasn't like a planned last show. It was just a show that we had booked. Then we were like, this should probably be my last show, guys. And I was like, you guys should continue this band. If you want to get a drummer, like, this is like, anyone could play this, but they didn't want to, you know. But, and I wanted, you know, I wanted to start a family and, you know, I met the person I loved and it all happened real quick. And I was ready to go the next step. And I'm not the best person on tour, you know. I'm a creature of comfort. I'm not the best touring guy. So for me, that lifestyle is a difficult one. But for some people, they're built for it, you know. Like, I feel like Peter and Joe are built for that lifestyle. But for me, I knew early on it wasn't something that, yeah, I didn't want to have like a kid and then be touring. Like, it's just not. Especially at that time when we had no money and we don't come from money. It was very difficult for us. We started making soap on food stamps, you know, like literally buying like coconut oil from, you know, Trader Joe's to like experiment and figure it all out. You know, it all worked out.
This whole story has been very weirdly inspiring.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. You know, it fell in my lap. When my first son was born, his name's Lake, and he had awful eczema, so he got this like super horrible rash, and so we went to the doctor, and it was right after they washed him with like a Johnson & Johnson, you know, the stuff they wash the babies with at the hospital. But he got this horrible, horrible rash, and we went to the doctor, and the doctor, we're like, what do we do about this? It's a very common thing. And the doctor said, well, you could do these creams and blah blah blah, and it's all a bunch of stuff that isn't the best, you know, to put on a newborn baby, I feel like putting chemicals and things you don't know. So anyway, so the doctor was, you try natural soap. So what we did, we ended up buying natural soap, and it worked. It took the eczema away immediately. And we're like, oh, wow, these chemicals really are terrible for certain people, you know? And so that's how we found what we were going to do. It fell right in our lap, and we were like, okay, let's buy natural soap. Start buying it. Shit's expensive, you know? So we were like, why don't we make it? And then we started taking herbs from the backyard, you know, mint and stuff like that, and infusing it. My wife is like super smart. So she wrote all these recipes, and she went to school for plant science. So she's very knowledgeable in, you know, plant oils and all that stuff. And yeah, that's how it happened. And then fast forward, got a store on the boardwalk and kicking ass, you know, very, very lucky. But it all happened naturally. Just same approach, little baby steps, just like, you know, when I'm in a band, it's just, you know, it was that same thing. We started doing farmers markets and making a little bit of money. And then we started doing some bigger shows. And then we were like, why don't we get a store? And it worked, you know, but all about that DIY ethic.
Yeah.
You know,
it's all there.
We're proud of you, Tank.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. You know, I'm proud of me. And I'm surprised. I'm fucking surprised that it's like, I say it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I have three kids. Like, I have a business, and I have a store on the boardwalk, and we sell, you know, tons of soap. And it's just like, what? How the fuck did this work out? How the fuck do I make a living making soap? This is great. I get to listen to music, smoke a little weed, you know, make some soap. You kidding me? It's like the best job in the world. And people rub the soap all over them. It's ridiculous. Like, how weird is that? Like, you're thinking about me while you're using that soap. And then they come back. They want another bar. They bond with the soap. They put it all over their, you know, parts. And now I'm getting a little carried away. But
this is the best thing that's ever happened on this podcast.
It's cool. It's a sweet gig.
Are there any parting thoughts or parting plugs that you want to do?
No, not that I can think of. I just you know, everything was super fun in Algernon, and being in that band was like one of the best parts of my life. And I hope that we can get together and do a reunion one day. I think that would be so fucking fun and cool. And you know, I'm just I'm stoked that people remember it, and it makes me so happy. And it's still so surprising that people still do are into it. And we were, you know, on the third pressing, I think, of the
reissue.
It's unbelievable. Like, I got a check in the mail. I got a check in the mail. And I'm like, what the fuck? I remember, like, it's just crazy. It's unbelievable.
I took
that money. I buy drums with it, because I tell my wife, I'm like, no, this is money for drums. This is drum money. You know?
Not drug money? No, drum money.
Drum money. Not the drugs. Yeah. Just the drums.
Yeah. The drums are your drug.
They really are. Drums are my family. I'm a family man.
All right. This is such a fun episode.
Yeah,
Tank, I had so much fun with
thanks.
This one.
Thanks for having me. Thank you. I'm honored, you know, to even be able to talk to you guys and have you know these songs and like them. And it's all just unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
I was
worried that Algernon wasn't going to win, just because, like, it would have been, like, Touche Amore or, like, a lot of spute thing. Something a little more, like, obvious, but, like, this album, like, really smoked.